America will celebrate the 250th anniversary of our nation on July 4th, 2026. Specifically, that will be the 250th anniversary of the acceptance of the final wording of the Declaration of Independence. Did the Bible have anything to do with the Declaration of Independence, our nation's birth certificate? The Declaration does mention God four times. One of those references is to the Supreme Judge of the world. Some scholars have noted that that is a reference to Jesus Christ, since the founders recognized the biblical truth from John 5 that Jesus will be our judge. And speaking of judges, Judge Darrell White is the founder of Retired Judges of America, and he joins us now to discuss the Bible and the Declaration of Independence. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and Judge Darrell White, it's good to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Well, it's wonderful to be with you, Jerry, and we all can put in our vocabulary a new term, semi-quincentennial. That's what 250 years means, and we're blessed to be under the longest enduring written constitution in the history of the world, and it was begun by our birth certificate, as you pointed out, the Declaration of Independence. With its four references, creator, the laws of nature and nature's God, the protection of divine providence, and that prayer at the end, the supreme judge of the world, whose protection we invoke. And it's up to us, we're on duty now, to learn more about the Declaration of Independence. I would urge everyone to go to ajatoday.com, and you will see a young man, he was 12 years old at the time he did it, recite verbatim from memory the entire Declaration of Independence, including the 27 grievances. And you'll see some other young people, including my five-year-old grandniece, recite what's known as the exordium and the enunciation. That's the first two paragraphs of the Declaration and the conclusion. In other words, skipping the 27 grievances. But I have rewarded loved ones monetarily with memorizing this, and I would encourage listeners to do the same thing for their young folks. Incentivize them. Cost me $200 with young Asher Vilar, but I was proud to have done it.
Wow, that's interesting. You know, Gary Bauer has mentioned that when he was running for president about 25 years ago, it was almost depressing when he would go to different schools and so forth, and he would say, can anybody tell me what these words mean or where they come from? We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal or endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Or maybe the way he worded it was, he said, can anybody tell us what the Declaration of Independence says at the heart of it? But in any event, the answer was hardly anybody did. He ended up giving a $20 bill, I think, to one kid who got it right. Yeah, it was the Declaration of Independence. But would you agree that there is a widespread ignorance among most Americans today, unfortunately, about our history, including this birth certificate, the Declaration of Independence?
Well, indeed there is, and that's by design of the communists. That's one of their stated goals. To keep us in ignorance of our organic laws. That's a phrase that was used at the very outset when the United States Code was promulgated, or even before that, when the federal statutes were put in a single volume, a fellow by the name of George Boutwell, B-O-U-T-W-E-L-L, about whom a biography has just been written by one of his descendants, George Boutwell. He was charged by Congress with getting all the federal statutes and putting them in a revised form bound together. And it wasn't until the 1920s that the United States Code was promulgated, but at the very outset are the organic laws of America. And that's the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation that governed us for a dozen years, the Northwest Ordinance, and I'll come back to that in a moment, and the Constitution in that order. The Northwest Ordinance is significant. It provided for statehood, and it has some glorious language. Listen to it. religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind, comma, schools and the means of education shall forever be encouraged in the United States. And we need to encourage that if we're going to have a literate populace. John Adams said it this way: we have no government armed with power capable of contending with human passions unbridled by morality and religion. Avarice, ambition, revenge, or gallantry, and I'll come back to what gallantry is, would break the strongest cords of our Constitution as a whale goes through a net. Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It's wholly inadequate to the government of any other. Gallantry is just exactly what describes the crime with which Bill Clinton was charged with Monica Lewinsky, taking advantage of some young lady. So anyway, that's the way John Adams put it. And we have other founders who issued similar warnings. Benjamin Rush, who was known as the father of American public education, warned about our failure to teach the Bible as part of education. And he said, if we ever got away from using the Bible in education, and these are his words, we'll spend more time and money punishing crime than preventing it. More time and money punishing crime than preventing it. And that's exactly the point we're at today. The jails are absolutely full. And I say that as a judge. I sit with trial jurisdiction as a judge, and I know they're full. We just had an LSU football game this past Saturday. We had shootings by the stadium. It's very sad, and it seems to me it points to the imperative that we need to get back to God's word as the basis of education. Now, there's a very hopeful prospect going on, resulting from Louisiana passing a Ten Commandments posting a piece of legislation, and just within the last week or so, we've seen that the Federal Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals has decided to hear that case en banc. That means all 17 of the Federal Fifth Circuit judges are going to take up that issue, and we'll see whether or not they align with the majority, the five judges in Stone versus Graham that came out of 1980, right about the time Ronald Reagan was elected and we had hostages still in Iran, and most people wanted to know who shot J.R., in the climactic episode of Dallas, but the U.S. Supreme Court came out with what's called a per curiam opinion. That means they didn't even sign their names to it. But five of the judges wrote this: if the posted copies of, and this is a Kentucky law, much like the Louisiana law, if the posted copies of the Ten Commandments are to have any effect at all, it would be to induce the school children to read them, to meditate upon them, to venerate and perhaps obey them, period. However desirable this may be as a matter of private devotion, this is not a permissible state objective under the Establishment Clause of the United States Constitution. Justice William Rehnquist, in his dissent, wrote that it's cavalier what these five justices, who didn't even sign their name to the opinion, were doing to a law that passed the Kentucky legislature and had been upheld through the Kentucky State Court, trial court, as well as the Kentucky Supreme Court. He wrote that it's cavalier. Do you know who his law clerk was at the time?
John Roberts.
It was Chief Justice John Roberts. So perhaps we'll get another chance to revisit these issues in the Stone versus Graham case, which is being tossed around as being the precedent. And it was five justices. So I've gone on long enough. Do you have any other questions?
I most certainly do. Okay, so let's go back to the Declaration of Independence. One of the references there to God is the word providence. Some people of modern times would say, why did they talk about providence? Why didn't they just talk about God, the biblical God? But providence implies a God that answers prayer, And that's not to be confused with the kind of a deistical notion of God, which is not the biblical God. A deistical God is more of a clockmaker's God. He made the universe, but then, you know, went away on a long vacation or something like that. He certainly doesn't, you know, care about us and listen and answer prayers. Now, George Washington was a praying man, and he was praying to the God of the Bible, and he read the Bible regularly and also used the Book of Common Prayer. So I'd like you to comment more on that word providence. Some people kind of get, you know, bent out of shape. You know, why didn't they talk like we talk today? That's kind of what they're saying, in effect.
It does illustrate the notion that language is important. Words are important. Let me give you the best quote that I have to solidify that concept, and it comes from David Limbaugh. That's Rush Limbaugh's brother, and he wrote this in an op-ed a number of years ago, and I committed it to memory. One principal way in which our civilization is rendered vulnerable to assault by its enemies and its false friends is through the undermining of linguistic truth. Language is the bloodstream of a culture, the real infrastructure of civilization. Words, and a word has been described by Oliver Wendell Holmes as the skin of a living thought, words can be prostituted and debauched, damaged by use, misuse, or intent, rendered untruthful and treacherous, devalued, aggrandized, stood as it were on their heads, or turned inside out. So long as we have language, we cannot be wholly enslaved or wholly uncivilized. Language is the framework of reason, and unless it is ordered and related to truth, well, then reason cannot express itself. And so providence is a very important word, and you fleshed it out well. It's a case that Donald Lutz, L-U-T-Z, and another fellow by the name of Heinemann studied. They spent quite a bit of time studying 15,000 founding-era documents. They synthesized that down to, distilled it down to 916 items, and they found that these were published between 1760 and 1805, the founding era, and they found that the Bible was cited more frequently than any other European writer or school of thought in literature. It accounted for fully a third of the citations of authority during that era. And let's go a little past that. And I like to refer to what has been called the Deed to America. And I would encourage your listeners to Google that term, the Deed to America, and read a speech given by David New, N-E-W, by that title, Deed to America. And what he talks about is the Treaty of Paris that was the document by which the war for independence was resolved, finally settled. And it was John Jay and
Benjamin Franklin
and John Adams who braved the Atlantic to go over to Paris and to co-sign that document. And the way it starts off is, in the name of the most holy and undivided Trinity, amen. That's the way the document starts. There's a concept in law, Gary. Pardon me?
Yeah, no, go ahead. We have 30 seconds left. Go ahead and wrap up, sir. There's a concept in law.
There's a concept in law called disinheritance. In Louisiana law, it has to do with disinheritance. It's the means by which you can be disinherited from inheriting from a relative, and if you try to bump off the testator, you lose your inheritance. So we shake our fist in God's face at our own peril. We have been God-blessed, and we need to recognize and acknowledge him, and we need to get away from this adult delinquency disorder is what I call it.
Wow, we're out of time, but I thank you so much for this. I'll refer people to your website. It is ajatoday.com. Judge White, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
Thank you, Jerry. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.